Anya woke later the next morning than she'd intended. She'd spent the night in a hotel not far from the Clark Hotel. She'd also paid in cash, so she wouldn't leave an electronic trail. After a quick shower, she put on the same clothes she had worn the day before, grimacing but knowing there was nothing to be done at the moment. All her clothes were in her loft, and she wasn't going there. Anya stopped at a cash machine for more money. Normally, she traveled with a few thousand dollars because cash in hand spoke harder and faster than plastic. Since she was downtown anyway, she stopped at Bloomingdale's and bought some basic, practical clothing, toiletries, and a pull-behind suitcase to carry them in. Anya guessed that she was going to be headed to Latvia, since that was where all the trails led, sooner rather than later. She didn't expect to get back to her loft before then. Hailing another cab, Anya headed to the Park House Hotel by the Brooklyn Bridge, where she'd taken a suite. Once there, Anya worked on the mosaic at the desk. What she'd told Bart about looking beneath the surface had stuck in her mind. The tile with the dog on the front was an obvious knockoff of a genuine Roman mosaic. So what lurked beneath the surface of the tesserae? She took out her Swiss Army knife and opened the flathead screwdriver blade. Gingerly, she started prying at a tessera on the top left corner. On a dig, everything was done grid by grid, so the work suited her well. The glass piece popped free without breaking, which was encouraging. She placed the tessera on the table, leaving room for the others as she took them off as well. Mario's note had told her to remember halt whistle. That had to have been a reference to the fight over the faux Roman artifacts. The mosaic obviously wasn't an artifact, so it was false. But Anya had to wonder how false it was. Mario had also said that an omelet couldn't be made without breaking eggs. That had to be a clue that she was supposed to take the mosaic apart. At least, she hoped it was. One way or another, she kept the tesserae in order so she could put the mosaic back together if she needed to. Excitement flared within her. It always did when she felt she was about to make a discovery. The gates opened as Wolfram Schluter steered toward them, and he missed them by mere inches. He sped through the meticulously landscaped grounds as the helicopter carrying his security guards landed at the helipad at the back of the castle. His massive citadel sat on a hill only a few miles from Leopoldsberg, the mountainous area that overlooked Vienna. Since the 11th century, the castle had existed in one form or another and been home to the Schluter barons. It had served King Jan III Sobieski during the Second Siege of Vienna. A Schluter had commanded in the Polish-Austrian army then, and Schluter Schloss had served as a supply depot and quartered the troops and the king at times. Wolfram Schluter couldn't remember which one of his ancestors had been there. If his grandmother knew he'd forgotten, she would have taken umbrage with him. For an old woman, she was quick with her hands, and Schluter knew she wouldn't hesitate to kill him. She had murdered his father, then poisoned her own daughter for being weak enough to marry such a man. His grandmother had also forced his mother to write out her own suicide note before drinking the barbiturates. His grandmother had made him watch as his mother died horribly. Wolfram had been 7 years old at the time. It was the worst thing he'd ever witnessed, especially since he'd thought she was going to kill him next. His grandmother had looked at him with her bright blue eyes.
You're a Schluter, Wolfram. You carry the seeds of greatness within you. That's why I saw to it you carry our family's name instead of your pitiful excuse for a father. And it's why I named you after my father.
When he had been born, his grandmother had taken over his rearing almost at once. That had been just as well. His father had been a drunkard and a gambler, and his mother had a drug problem that she no longer bothered to hide after he was born. His grandmother had stopped caring whether his mother lived or not. She had made the male heir she'd wanted to carry on the family name. He could still remember hearing his grandmother call the police and tell them there had been a terrible accident. Then, when the police arrived, they were properly respectful to her. Everything was Baroness Schluter this and Baroness Schluter that. The whole time, she held on to his hand and told him that everything was going to be all right. It was then that Schluter realized just how much power his grandmother wielded. As he'd grown, he longed for the time that that power would be his. Now it was almost within his grasp. Except for that woman, that witch, Irena Skuyans, and her lover. Schluter had made no allowances for her cunning ways. Last night had even more sharply delineated his miscalculation of her. His grandmother was 82 now. She had already lived far longer than Schluter had thought was possible, considering the way she smoked and drank. The main house stood 3 stories tall and had a distinctly Gothic design. The stone was off-white, almost gray, but it held an air of eternal vigilance that Schluter had always recognized. Gargoyles straddled the roof's edge, staring down at visitors like birds of prey. There was a bright red Ferrari parked in front of the house. Low and sleek, the sports car gave the appearance that some kind of spacecraft had landed at Schluter Schloss. The gullwing doors lifted when Schluter hit the release. He unfastened his seatbelt and got out, straightening his suit. Schluter's bodyguard, Gustav, crawled out on his side weakly and sagged against the fender. Schluter knew that his men drew straws to see who would have to ride with him when he chose to drive.
Oh, thank God.
Don't get that on the car, Gustav.
Schluter gazed at the Ferrari. He knew its specifications as well as he knew the back of his own hand. It was his dream car.
Do you like the car?
Startled, Schluter turned toward the main house. A man stood where he hadn't been standing a moment ago. He was tall, at least 4 or 5 inches over 6 feet, built broad and strong, and looked very fit. His face was strongly chiseled, making the goatee he wore stand out even more prominently. His long black hair trailed down to his shoulders, and a gold hoop earring glinted in his left ear. He wore an Armani suit.
I love this car. It has a 12-cylinder engine, a carbon fiber body, and an F1 sequential shift. Only 400 of this model were ever manufactured.
I have 3 of them.
3? This car costs $600,000.
I couldn't decide which was my favorite color, so I bought a red one, a yellow one, and had one custom painted, blending from seafoam green at the front to Kelly green at the back.
It sounds beautiful.
It is. I should have brought it, but I drove it last time.
I don't know you.
That's because we've never met. I'm an old friend of your grandmother's. She invited me. She said there was a problem, and I might be able to help.
What problem?
I don't know. We only spoke over the phone. I just got here myself.
From Vienna?
Yes.
That's impossible. I would have passed you on the road.
I don't think so.
What is your name?
Let's go in and talk to your grandmother. If she wants you to know my name, she'll tell you.
Schluter was suddenly seized by rage and emboldened as he noticed that his bodyguards had appeared around the main building. The mysterious man put on a pair of sunglasses he'd been holding in one hand in a subtle act of defiance.
No. I'll have your name or you won't enter the house.
You're making a mistake.
You're the one who has made a mistake. Men! Throw him out!
The bodyguards started forward at once on his command. Most of them reached for weapons, doubtless because of the man's size. Before Schluter could blink, the man had a pistol in each hand. They were short-barreled, but big-bored semi-automatics. He pointed one of them at Schluter's head and the other one at the group of men.
Big, big mistake.
Wolfram?
Go away, Grandmother. I can handle this.
Try it. I'll put a bullet right between your eyes.
Wolfram!
His grandmother came down off the steps, hobbling on her cane. She was thin and bent with age, her hair perfectly styled, as always. But something about her appearance was different. Schluter was shocked to realize that she wore makeup for the first time that he could remember. Rouge showed on her pale, withered cheeks and lipstick on her lips. She wore a dress that Schluter had never seen before, a pearl-gray one that hinted at what little figure she had left to her. The light of the early evening revealed her age. She glared at him with her pale, watery blue eyes.
You will stop this instant!
Schluter ignored her order. His bodyguards kept their weapons leveled at the man, who acted as though he hadn't a care in the world. The mystery man's pistol never wavered from Schluter's face.
Who is this man, Grandmother?
A friend of our family.
I don't know him.
He was a friend before your time.
Schluter took another look at the man. He didn't look any older than Wolfram, maybe 30 or 35.
Half your men, put their weapons down.
He can lower his weapons first. In fact, he can turn them over.
You will obey me, Wolfram?
For a moment, Schluter wanted to dare her to do her worst, but he couldn't. Her worst could leave him bereft of his inheritance. He wasn't prepared for that.
Men, drop your weapons.
Schluter's guards put away their weapons immediately. The big man responded by shoving away the tails of his coat and holstering both pistols behind his back. He was still smiling.
Wolfram, I want to introduce you to this man. As I said, he's an old friend, and he's here to help you with your problem.
My problem is well in hand.
I don't think so. From what I'm told, your men killed Mario Fellini in New York City without getting the information they were sent there to get.
He wouldn't tell them. Not even when he was compelled.
I was also told that the woman, the witch, also ambushed you in the castle at Riga.
That didn't happen.
You were lucky. Now, I want you to come into the house so we can discuss this in a civilized manner.
His grandmother dismissed Schluter with a wave of her hand, then graciously extended the same hand to the stranger.
Now, sir, I hope you will forgive my grandson.
The man bowed and took her hand in his. He touched his lips to the withered flesh. A smile curved across his grandmother's lips as if she was embarrassed. Schluter was astounded. He'd never seen his grandmother behave that way.
Of course. Anything you wish, Kika. I've told you that.
In all of his life, Schluter had never heard anyone call his grandmother by her given name. The man released his grandmother's hand and turned to face Schluter.
Wolfram, this is Garin Braden. He's going to help us with the Riga problem.